Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, January 3rd, 2013. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, brewing Bronze Age style. Archaeologist Ian Hill joins us to talk about the discovery of a possible brewing site that's thousands of years old. And he'll tell us how his own Bronze Age style homebrew turned out. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james, and our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site, especially during this past busy holiday season. You know how it works. When you think of Amazon.com, go to our website first, click on the Amazon link there on our page. That will take you to the Amazon site, and then whatever you buy during that session, we'll get a little hunk of it. So we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. And you can find our Basic Brewing iPhone and Android podcast apps out there on the iTunes store. And the Android app is on Amazon.com. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. Lots of you have already ordered your Basic Brewing Brewer's Logbook, or have received it under the tree or in your stocking. However, if Santa passed you over, or if your hints weren't explicit enough to Santa, you can find our newly redesigned logbook on our basicbrewingshop.com site. A year's worth of calendar pages in the front and 50 brewing session entries in the back will help you track all the details of your brewing for a whole year and maybe beyond. Check them out on our site, and great thanks to everybody who has already got one. I hope you had a great holiday season, and I hope that your new year is going well. It was a bit of a challenge to get the rusty gears going today to put together this week's show, but if you're hearing this, it apparently all worked out in the end. I appreciate everybody's patience if you had to wait an extra long time to get an email answer from me the past few weeks. And speaking of which, let's look into the mailbag. Pete from Auckland, New Zealand, writes after hearing the show with Mitch Steele, the brewmaster at Stone, on Mitch's IPA book. Pete says, the Stone IPA episode was perfect timing as I'm experimenting with IPA hop bombs at the moment and just bottled an attempted clone of the Stone Ruination. In the show, you and Mitch referred to the Sierra Nevada yeast being probably the same as the Ballantine IPA, but you didn't mention the name or type. If you could please advise, I would be very grateful. The APA style is just starting to get some momentum here in New Zealand, so it's great to hear on your show from pioneers of the style who are really pushing the boundaries. Thanks for the note, Pete. You know, you caught me. I broke one of my rules, and that is not to assume that everybody listening knows everything about what we're talking about. Everybody approaches the hobby from different levels of knowledge and background. And we're all about passing on information and helping you to brew the beers that you want to brew. The yeast that we were talking about is known as the Chico yeast, or California ale yeast, or some call it the American ale yeast. White Labs sells it as WLP001. With Y yeast, it's 1056. And Safale, the dry yeast company, calls it US05. And it's a fun yeast to play with. It doesn't give a lot of character from the yeast itself, but it helps the hops shine through. Owen writes in with this, I was excited to see your podcast on filtering, but was a little disappointed to hear it sound so complicated. I've been filtering now for about a year, almost as long as I've been kegging, and it really is simple. After a few days of cold conditioning, I simply use a 3-tiered gravity-fed method to filter. I fermented a plastic vessel with a tap near the bottom. I'm physically able to lift the fermenter and place it on top of my fridge. I have the filter setting on a chair about half the height of the fridge with the keg placed on the floor. I connect the filter to the keg's beer outpost. This allows the beer to fill the keg from the bottom. Connect the CO2 to the keg's gas in post and purge both the keg and the filter. I then open the keg's gas release valve and then connect the filter to the fermentation vessel and open the tap. The gravity is enough force to push the beer through the filter and into the keg. After forced carbonation, the beer is ready to drink in 6 to 8 hours. Owen says, yes, there is a little bit of extra cleaning involved, but overall I wouldn't go back to non-filtering. I find that by filtering, the beer is ready for drinking quicker and really looks the goods. Well, thanks, Owen. You know, I think I'm going to try filtering some of my beers as well. For instance, I brewed a Belgianish beer recently with White Labs 500 yeast, and I always find that that takes a long time for that stuff to settle out. It's not very flocculent. It is a very tasty beer, but man, I was not wanting to be very patient while waiting for that yeast to settle out. I even put it in a 10-gallon cylindrical cooler and put some ice on top of it to kind of, you know, cold shock that thing and see if it would settle out. But in the end, I had to be patient. But that's one of my goals for the new year is to learn to get the gear to filter and to learn how to do it. Gary writes in with this. I saw your video of your kicking up a Mr. Beer kit. I have a Mr. Beer Classic American Light. It only has the extract and the yeast. My question is, can I kick it up a notch? Can I add grains in addition to the extract and use a different yeast? Will it make it a regular beer and not a light? I'm not really fond of light beers and like more taste. Any advice would be greatly appreciated. Well, yeah, in the past year since we did our Doctoring Mr. Beer episode of a Basic Brewing video, Mr. Beer has been bought out by Coopers. And they appear to be phasing out the old booster pack of corn sugar and replacing it by selling bigger cans of liquid extract. So it's actually an all malt beer now, apparently. You can certainly still add more base malt to the extract as we did in our Doctoring Mr. Beer episode. But since you're not replacing that booster, you'll be adding to the gravity of your beer. So you'll end up with a higher gravity beer, meaning it'll have more alcohol in the end than just using the extract that comes with a kit. But I bet it will taste better. But don't forget to add more hops at the end of the boil, as we did in the video, to kick up the hop flavor and aroma too while you're at it. Let us know how it turns out. And this may be an idea. Maybe we need to revisit the Doctoring Mr. Beer concept with a new recipe formulation and see how we can improve it. Okay, let's get to the meat of the matter. A while back, Steve Wilkes forwarded an article on the internet about an archaeology dig in Cyprus that had uncovered what they called an ancient microbrewery. Well, this got my attention, of course, and when I read in the article that Ian Hill, who was working on the project, had built a replica of the building and had actually brewed beer using it, I said, that's a show. Ian Hill, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You were with HARP, that is the Heritage and Archaeological Research Practice, is that right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
What kind of an organization is that?
It's an archaeological-based organization. We sort of do a whole host of things, focusing on heritage and archaeology and trying to do interesting research projects. But at the same time, we also work with local community groups and trying to help them find out more about their sort of local area, their heritage, and that kind of thing.
And have you got projects going worldwide?
Yeah, we've got we're based in Scotland in the UK, but so that's sort of where our main hub of activity is. But we've also conducted a few projects in Europe and in Cyprus, and we're always looking to, you know, sort of try anything that's interesting, really, try and wherever that may take us. So
now for those of us who are geographically challenged, Cyprus is in the eastern part of the Mediterranean Sea, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Now, the thing that we're talking about, the headline on the article that I read says Bronze Age microbrewery, in quotes, discovered in Cyprus. Mm-hmm, yep. How accurate is that?
We think it's pretty accurate at the moment. The work that's been done on the site, it's actually a University of Manchester project that's been run by Dr. Lindy Crew. She's been running the project in Cyprus since 2007 at a site called Kasonaga Scalia. Now, I've been fortunate to be working on the site since 2008, and there was a structure that we've been excavating every year. We work for about a month each summer, and every year that the project's been going on, we've been finding a little bit more and a little bit more about this one specific structure, as well as the rest of the excavations that are going on. But this one's been posing many questions for us, and it's taken us a few years to actually come up with the theory that it is actually to do with beer production. We think it's a drying kiln for malting grains. The structure we've uncovered over the years, it's an oval structure about 2.5 meters long and 1.5 to 2 meters wide, with a large opening on one side, and it's made from mud plaster with sort of stone inclusions to help bind the material together. And we think originally it would have had a domed roof, because what we found were sections or large pieces of mud plaster that were really nicely curved and quite well shaped. Up to three to four centimeters thick, had collapsed inside the structure. So we think it, like I say, originally had a domed roof that was, once the structure fell out of use or was abandoned, this roof then collapsed to the inside of the structure.
Now, what were the clues that made you think at first that this was actually used as a brewery?
Well, originally it took a few years to come up with this theory. Quite often it's a lack of evidence or a lack of other things that it could have been that sort of pointed us towards this. Because quite often with the brewing, there's not very much left in the archaeological record. Because normally we would, you would think, oh, barley, if we had lots of barley, but for that to survive, it would need to be burnt. And in the brewing process, you never really get it to that, that level. So there's very little of that surviving. The other thing that we originally thought, it might have been an oven or a kiln, sort of like a pottery kiln, but there was no evidence of pots in, sort of pots that were being fired or produced in there. And the temperatures, we had no evidence of really, really high temperatures happening inside the structure, which made us sort of think towards the more lower temperatures or more controlled heat, just for sort of circulating hot air and drying things within it. So that sort of pointed us towards a drying kiln, similar in a way to sort of medieval drying kilns that are used in Europe and especially in Britain for drying grains, which is also used for malting grains for beer production in the medieval period over here as well.
So what time period are we looking at?
The site itself, or the main occupation period we're looking at, is the early to middle Bronze Age period in Cyprus. Now, at the moment, we're sort of looking at a period from about 2100 BC to up to maybe 1600 BC. And the structure itself is one of the latest occupation phases. So probably around 1600 BC, that sort of time. It's actually the transition into the late Bronze Age in Cyprus.
So is it common to find something like this of this age, something related to the brewing craft?
Not as common as you would hope, given that the number of beer drinkers over the ages. But there's more and more. There are other sites with evidence of brewing, and I think the more that it's highlighted that structures like this could be to do with brewing, the more people will actually start to look at their structure, some of the evidence that they have, in maybe a different way rather than some of the more traditional ways of viewing the evidence. But it is a very interesting, it's not that common to find these things, so yeah, we were quite pleased when we did, and archaeologists love their beer, so it's not a bad thing to find.
So you don't think you were just reading things into it after a few pints?
Well, initially, it seemed that that may have, you know, maybe we were sort of clutching at straws. But the more we dug, the more research we did, the more we looked into it. It's become definitely the strongest case we've got for this structure on the site.
Were there any other artifacts that were found around there?
Yeah, we actually within the way the structure was set up, there was a large storage vessel, like a pithos, which is probably over a meter in height, which was actually sunk into the ground and is actually forms part of the structure, which is where we think they had the main fire. So the fire was contained within that large pot, and the hot air from that then came and circulated within the dome of the structure. But then in the base of the structure itself, there was lots of broken pots, broken vessels, sort of half open vessels, set into little scoops or little pits. And we think that may have been where they were actually drying or malting the grain inside these pots. So not the traditional malter's floor, but actually containing them within small pots. Maybe the pots that they'd been germinated in before they malted them. You know, again, we're not sure. We need to do some more analysis of the pottery vessels themselves, potentially, to see if we could get some sort of stronger results, chemical analyses and things like that.
So you didn't find any ancient dartboards or anything like that around there?
No, there was no bar. So, funny you should mention that, though. We did, in close proximity to here, we found a couple of stones that are referred to as gaming stones, which they believe that they would have been used for, you know, simple games with PCs and counters. They're not really sure. There's a lot of different versions that there could be. So we found a couple of things that potentially were used for gaming stones. So you never know. Maybe there was a little bar in the corner.
See, even a stupid question can
exactly,
get some.
Yeah.
Now, since it was the Bronze Age, you know, they would have a bronze rail to rest your feet on instead of the brass one.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. A bronze cult hook and things like that.
Now the main reason that I'm talking to you, I mean, the archaeological results or information is fun enough, but you took it a step further and tried to replicate the site, and actually you brewed some beer yourself, right?
Yeah, that's right. We in August of this year we had a team of students from around the world who came along and took part, and we reconstructed as best we could the structure, you know, to the level that we understand it and the way that we thought it would have been used. The main reason we wanted to was to see if, sort of, to test our hypothesis, to see if it could have been used as a drying kiln, you know, or a malting kiln. And so we recreated as best we could the structure, and then whilst we were at it, we thought, why not? Let's have a go and brew some beer at the same time.
Now, are you an experienced home brewer yourself?
I'm fairly new to home brewing. I have to admit, I've been an avid drinker of beer over the years, but it's a new one for me, the home brewing. But I've taken to it quite well, I think, and this was a big step up, definitely doing it from scratch. But it's it was very interesting, anyway.
Yeah, no kidding. That's for one of your first batches. I mean, that's a fairly aggressive step to take.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily recommend the product, but
well, take us through. I mean, you're talking to a bunch of homebrewers all around the world, so take us step by step on how you brewed your beer.
Well, we like I say, we tried to work it to using the evidence that we had to the best of our knowledge. That they may have done. I mean, I'm not saying that this was the definite way that they did it. So we tried. We used the evidence that we had from the site, but we also applied sort of more modern approaches to brewing. So The main evidence that we had some barley found on the site, and we also inside the kiln we also found fig seeds. So we presumed, or the assumption that we made was that it was, if it was beer, it was a barley based beer, and potentially using figs either as an additive for flavor or as the actual source of the yeast for the fermentation process. So we got some barley, and we tried different methods to see which would work best. We steeped it and allowed, you know, began the germination process, and then we used a couple of different methods to malt it. We used the sun, because what we think is that the structure may have been seasonal. In Cyprus, the temperature in the summer is there's enough sun and it's hot enough to probably malt the grain in the sun naturally, but during the winter it can get cold. The weather isn't as ideal as you would hope. So we think potentially the structure is actually used in the winter, maybe to keep, you know, the production going throughout the year. So we did a batch in the sun, and we used the finished structure to malt a batch of grain as well.
Now, for those who aren't, I'm assuming that most of the audience is familiar with the malting process, but first you've got to steep the grain in water to sprout it, right? And then once it's sprouted to the proper length or modified well enough, then you have to dry it. And so you're saying that they might have done it in the sun, and they might have done it in this dome using heat from a fire.
Yeah, I think so. You just wouldn't get the temperatures in the wintertime there. So... you know, and I think whilst you could use the sun in the summer, maybe they were getting, if they were using this kiln in the winter time, it could have been that they were getting more success with it. You know, you actually have a lot more control over what you're doing, how long you're going to be drying them for, and to what temperatures. Because with the structure we built, we were able to regulate the temperature quite well, and you know, you could, by adding more fuel, and we built a chimney into the top and some doors to cover the opening, so you could actually regulate the temperature quite nicely in there.
So was it pretty smoky inside there?
Yeah, it was, and I think that would probably add to the flavor as well, I imagine. It was quite smoky to begin with, but once you get down to the, when we, you know, you'd get your main fire going, but once you get down to the embers and just the sort of the hot coals, if you like, then it was more of a cleaner fire. You know, there wasn't as much smoke coming from it. But you know, if the smoke was desirable for the flavor, then you know, you just throw in some more fuel and get the smoke going again.
How did you brew the beer after you got the malt?
Okay, so we heated up a batch of water. We did different batches to try, because we used different flavors in the process, and we also tried different amounts of water to see what effect that would have on the end result. So we were sort of working on the principle of either 3.5 liters or 7 liters of water to 1 kilogram of grain. So we would heat up the desired amount to about 70 degrees. Then we'd pitch in the crushed malt and leave it to mash for about an hour and a half, making sure that the temperature never dropped below 65 degrees. From that, I think we had 5 or 6 different batches at the end that we would then use to add different flavors and different yeasts to for the fermentation processes.
So did you boil after you collected the wort from the mash, or how did you handle that?
Yeah, once we finished the mashing, we drained the wort out, and we poured or sparged some more water through to get as much of the sugars out of the malt as we could. And then we did, yeah, we boiled. We don't know if this was done back in the day, but for our own health and safety, we thought it was best to boil it. So we boiled the wort for I think about an hour, just to be on the safe side, and then cooled it. Again, we did different processes where we would let some cool naturally, and others we cooled, and we took our pots and put them inside a cold or another vessel with cold water in to try and cool it down a bit quicker.
And they didn't know about yeast yet, so how did you get the fermentation going?
Well, we used, like I said earlier, we had evidence of fig seeds. So we were thinking, you know, maybe there was figs that were used as an additive, maybe for flavoring. Or, but we also know that wild figs, you know, wild fruits, actually have yeast on their skins. So wild yeast. So we attempted two different types. We used wild figs, and we also tried wild grapes. We were just experimenting here, really. We didn't know what effects we'd have. We didn't know what yeasts were actually the fruits that we were using would have on them. So it was just to see what would happen. So we tried, figs and grapes. So once the wort had cooled properly, we pitched in some crushed figs into one batch and some crushed grapes into a second batch. We used, as well as the figs and the grapes, we used a control batch where we used modern brewer's yeast as well, just to sort of compare the results of our crazy ideas with the more tried and tested methods.
So what were your results?
We had a variety of results, really. Some of them were you wouldn't want to have again, and others were actually they were quite nice. Surprisingly, there was a couple that just had a distinct smell that would put most people off, but once you actually got through the smell, the taste was okay. So I think the sweetness of the fruits helped, you know, probably helped with that, definitely.
So which were the more successful?
The most successful in terms of flavor was the fig beer. That was quite smooth and quite sweet. It had a nice finish to it. When we were doing the yeast as well, we tried a couple of different things. So some would just have the fresh crushed fruit pitched in, whilst others had been sort of left to ferment themselves for a couple of days to get the yeast culture growing, and then added in.
So beer at this time period was more than just recreation, right?
Yeah, we think so. You know, there's obviously a lot of time and effort invested into the whole production process. And there's a few theories being that it was actually more of a sort of an incentive for labor. You know, there would be like a work feast, if you like. So the incentive of beer and food at the end would be used to gather a workforce together in some form of, you know, large scale construction project.
And there's nothing like alcohol to make construction project go more smoothly, right?
If you know you've got a nice cool beer at the end of it, then you know.
Or maybe during, I don't know.
Well, yeah.
This experience of brewing as a Bronze Age man would, what has this done for your aspirations of being a home brewer?
Oh, well, it's definitely made me want to do it more and get better at it. But no, yeah, it was a thoroughly enjoyable experience, and it's really made me want to learn more, and second to try it more from the beginnings as well, because I'm going to carry on myself with the home brewing, but we're going to go back and do another season in Cyprus next summer. We want to build a second structure to sort of perfect our construction techniques, try different things out, but we also want to do more brewing to see what we can achieve with the sort of recipes, if you like, and the flavors, and try and get a more complete beer by the end of it as well.
Well, I wish you the best of luck.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
This is really interesting, and you've inspired me because I've got a fig tree in my yard.
Great.
So next year when we have figs, I'm gonna brew a beer with it.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah.
I'll let you know how it turns out.
Yeah, please do.
Well, Ian Hill, you are an inspiration, as I say, and your patience is also an inspiration, as I hope that I can edit out the evidence of all the Skype mishaps that we've been having. But
it's great. Thanks again. It's been really enjoyable.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks again to Ian. I hope that you can't tell, but that was the most challenging Skype call that I've ever tried to record. The Skype gremlins were very active, and we lost connection many, many times. So I greatly, greatly appreciate Ian's patience in sticking with me to record the entire interview. I would have liked to talk longer to Ian about the process and about his impressions of the beer that he brewed and such as that. But I didn't want to push him. That's as far as I wanted to push him. And I'm glad that neither one of us sounded frustrated or angry at the end of that. Whew. Skype is free and worth every penny. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. Please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Usually Skype is great. I can't pick on it too much. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. You can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. And our new logbooks are now on the store, available to order. They are going out the door. Some are waiting on my desk, ready to go out today, in fact. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com, and if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We greatly appreciate the support. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are The Caner's Handbook, a descriptive guide with step-by-step photographs for restoring cane, rush, splint, Danish cord, rawhide, and wicker furniture. That sounds like fun. And Tubes, a journey to the center of the internet. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we greatly appreciate your support. Greatly. And don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine. I told you I was rusty, through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all. Until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson and Alston Texas. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.